Welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence. It is Monday, July 6th, 2026, and you are joining us for the Technology Edition.
Our thesis today centers on the fundamental decoupling of human intuition from market efficiency. We are moving from a period of algorithmic assistance to a structural reality where autonomous systems dictate the very parameters of value.
So the math is officially outrunning the makers.
Precisely.
We begin by examining the shifting boundaries of creativity, commerce, and the algorithm. According to a recent Wall Street Journal investigation, 70% of a certain sample of Polymarket creator videos showed users placing bets, yet zero of those featured real trades, with the winners actually facing massive losses of over $166,000. Today, we're looking at the intersection of creativity, commerce, and the algorithm. It's a world where your brand identity is a prompt, your marketing budget is a training set, and your entire existence depends on whether a chatbot thinks you're worth mentioning.
It's a shift from being visible to being influential. We are seeing the death of traditional SEO and the birth of generative engine optimization, or GEO.
So the goal isn't to rank number one on a search page anymore. It's to convince a large language model that you are the only logical answer to a user's query. It's a world of optimized keywords, engineered Reddit threads, and strategically placed Wikipedia edits.
Something to flag here, as Nilay Patel noted on Decoder, we're seeing a transition toward knowledge sites. These aren't websites designed for humans to browse through unstructured text. They are being rebuilt as structured databases specifically to feed AI agents. If your website isn't legible to an LLM, you effectively don't exist in an era of agentic search.
It sounds incredibly efficient if you ignore the fact that it turns the entire internet into a massive automated library catalog.
It's more than just a catalog, it's a fundamental restructuring of brand strategy. As Masters of Scale highlighted, modern strategy is moving toward a priming and proving framework. You use traditional marketing to prime the human audience with emotion and story, but you must simultaneously prove your value to the models by securing authoritative mentions in third-party communities like Reddit or YouTube. If the AI doesn't find you in the training data, the prime never reaches the consumer.
Which means the chief marketing officer is essentially being demoted to a glorified data scientist.
Or replaced entirely. Amy Lanzi of Digitas argues that the traditional CMO role, which focused on campaign creativity and media spend, is being superseded by the Chief Growth Officer, or CGO. The CGO manages an integrated growth engine where data, commerce, and consumer insights are a single automated loop. We're even seeing agency models restructure around chief intelligence and systems officers to manage these automated workflows.
Instead of a creative director dreaming up a Super Bowl ad, we have a systems architect optimizing a supply chain of content.
That's the industrialization of the mundane. The real economic value of generative AI lies in using automation to handle high-volume, low-stakes tasks, like generating product display pages. This creates the cognitive bandwidth for humans to focus on high-level storytelling. But there is a risk. At the Cannes Lions discussions, Dara Trester warned that the creative is the new targeting mantra, where platforms treat emotional content as mere fuel for algorithmic optimization, threatens to degrade brand equity. If your magic is just a variable in an optimization loop, you eventually hit consumer fatigue.
I can see it. Everything becomes a perfectly optimized, perfectly bland, perfectly clickable hallucination.
It's a ceiling razor effect, though. Take the vibe coding phenomenon. As discussed in the context of Rick Rubin's work, AI allows for a democratization of creation similar to how punk rock removed the need for conservatory training. You don't need to master syntax, you need to master taste. The value shifts from technical execution, the ability to write the code, to the ability to direct the machine's iterations toward a specific vision.
But vibe coding sounds like a recipe for a lot of very pretty, very useless products.
There is a danger there. The pragmatic engineer noted that the real threat of AI-driven development isn't the loss of skill, but the widening gap between rapid, AI-accelerated development cycles and the slow, multi-year organizational chains of marketing and legal that simply cannot respond to new competitors in time. We're also seeing a wrong native trap, which Masters of Scale identified as a risk where developers use rapid AI tools to build such polished versions of a product that they become too emotionally committed to kill it, even if the market doesn't want it.
So you end up with a highly polished, perfectly engineered product that nobody actually needs.
Worth noting, that's happening even as the creator economy scales into enterprise-level logistics. We are moving away from simple influencer marketing toward a creator-as-agency model. Top-tier creators are managing physical product supply chains and complex commerce integrations. But it's a barbell economy. You have the high-cost celebrity creators at one end and low-cost UGC creators at the other, with the middle class being squeezed out.
It's the one-click commerce era. You see a video on TikTok shop, you click, and a package arrives. The distinction between content and commerce has vanished.
And that's where the tech platforms win. As Bob Safian pointed out, the shift from agencies to platforms like Meta and Google means brands must focus on earned media. Even in B2B, the journey is changing. Executives are now using LLMs to generate shortlists for the RFP process during their coffee on the plane stage. If you aren't in the model's shortlist, you aren't even invited to the conversation.
It's a total takeover of the top of the funnel by the software.
It's a reconfiguration. The goal is to use AI for the syntax, the execution, the scale, the repetition, so humans can focus on the semantics, the meaning, the art, the soul. As Zach Skier from Photolabs suggested, AI raises the floor of technical execution, but it widens the gap between the average and the elite. The elite will use these agentic workflows to achieve levels of complexity that were previously impossible.
Brand managers need to start auditing their presence in Reddit threads and YouTube comments as much as their Google ads.
They need to treat their digital footprint as a structured dataset for the next generation of search.
Watch for the first major brand collapse caused by an AI-generated hallucination of a product defect trending on social media.
The real indicator will be whether we see the rise of AI transparency cards, essentially nutrition labels for content, becoming a standard requirement for consumer trust.
But as we automate the way we present the truth, the ways we try to break into these systems are getting much more dangerous. I was reading this morning that a ransomware operation called Jade Puffer managed to encrypt over 1,300 configuration records in exactly 31 seconds. 31 seconds. That's not an attack, that's a software update gone rogue.
It's actually much more precise than that. According to CyberWire Daily, the operation used an AI agent to exploit a Langflow server, and the terrifying part isn't just the speed, but the autonomy. The agent was able to execute lateral movement and even self-correct its own administrative errors without any human intervention.
So we've moved from hackers sitting in dark basements typing away to basically letting a digital locust swarm loose on our servers and just hoping it gets bored after half a minute.
Two things stand out. We're entering a machine versus machine era of cybersecurity. The sheer velocity of AI-driven vulnerability discovery is pushing us toward a landscape where the volume of exploits will soon exceed the capacity of human-led patching and manual remediation entirely. It's a centrifuge of extreme velocity where our existing security architectures are being spun apart.
It sounds like trying to fix a leaky dam using only a handful of pebbles while a fire hose is pointed directly at the cracks.
That's a fair way to frame the scale. And it's not just about the speed of the attack, but the corruption of the very tools we use to build software. Arya Varmazis has raised concerns that the influx of AI-generated vibe coding into open-source projects is making it nearly impossible for maintainers to track the security of new code.
Vibe coding. Is that when you just prompt an LLM until the syntax looks correct enough and you pray to the gods of compilation?
Essentially, yes. It introduces a massive supply chain risk because auditing AI-authored code creates these unknown unknowns. We're seeing a new layer of risk where malicious payloads can be executed via seemingly benign GitHub setup instructions or DNS retrieve scripts, all without any malicious code actually residing in the repository itself. It's why researchers like Ian Carroll demonstrated that advanced models, specifically Claude Opus 4.7, can now be used to bypass web application firewalls and gain super admin privileges through SQL injection flaws.
So the vibe is actually vulnerability. And I suppose the more code we pump into the ecosystem via these agents, the more vibe coding becomes the industry standard.
Which creates a massive economic shift. The A16Z show noted that the cost of addressing insecure code is actually decreasing because AI can find it. But the cost of leaving it unanchored is skyrocketing because AI-driven automated exploitation is so efficient. It's a fundamental shift in the cost-benefit analysis of software maintenance.
It also feels like a bit of a regulatory paradox. If we restrict these models because they're too good at finding bugs, we're basically disarming the police while the criminals are still using the same tools.
That's precisely the dilemma. The A16Z show highlighted the dual-use nature of AI as a regulatory paradox. Restricting a model's ability to identify vulnerabilities to prevent hacking also prevents defenders from using that same capability to proactively patch their own systems. We're seeing this tension play out in real time with the recent lifting of US export restrictions on Anthropic's Fable 5. All In with Chamath, Jason Sachs, and Friedberg reported that the decision was driven by a triple threat. The founders' branding of the model as a cyber weapon, Amazon's reports of failed guardrails, and the developers' refusal to roll back the model until fixes were implemented.
It's a very move fast and break things approach to international trade policy.
And it's breaking things like the very concept of a stable perimeter. We're seeing blue kit phishing kits that use the RR web tool to serialize the DOM for man-in-the-browser attacks, and even gaslight malware designed to use deceptive strings to trick AI-driven malware analysis engines into triggering error handling protocols. It's a deliberate attempt to manipulate the logic of the defenders' own automated tools.
So the attackers are essentially trying to gaslight the AI so it looks the other way while they walk through the front door.
and the architecture of our defense has to change. We can't rely on static, rules-based systems anymore. The industry is moving toward agentic security systems, what Daff Stoddard and Katie Warren from Portswigger describe as using a deterministic harness. The idea is to let the AI handle the heavy creative execution tasks, while humans maintain governance through a strict, deterministic architecture. We need an architecture of allow lists and endpoint access limits to prevent these security agents from essentially acting like infinity script kiddies.
It's a move from checking IDs at the door to monitoring how someone behaves once they're already inside the club.
The data tells a story. We need continuous adaptive authentication that monitors session behavior rather than just the initial login. The window of exploitation has compressed from days to mere seconds. Even Apple is responding to this narrowing window by decoupling security updates from major iOS releases, allowing them to react much faster to AI-assisted hacking capabilities.
Security architects need to stop building walls and start building immune systems.
A system that can recognize a pathogen and initiate a response before the human even knows there's an infection.
Developers must integrate deterministic guardrails into every AI agent deployment before they begin autonomous lateral movement. Watch for the first major instance of an AI agent self-correcting a security failure during a live enterprise breach. That will be the moment the industry realizes the old playbook is officially dead. But if the software is becoming this unpredictable, does the hardware itself have a breaking point? We are currently witnessing a massive, expensive tug-of-war between two irreconcilable forces, the insatiable hunger for raw compute and the mounting pressure to actually turn a profit on it. It's the new Silicon Arms race, and I can't decide if we're building the future or just a very expensive, very hot pile of scrap metal. So, Alex, where are you placing your bets?
If you're betting on the hardware, the momentum is still heavily skewed toward the supply side, but the focus is shifting. We're moving out of phase one, which was all about GPU training, and into a second phase centered on the infrastructure of inference, specifically targeting the bottlenecks in memory, storage, and liquid cooling.
Which sounds a lot like saying the party is moving from the dance floor to the electrical room.
The pattern is clear. That move is creating a massive ripple effect across the entire supply chain. It's not just about NVIDIA anymore. We're seeing a transition where companies like Micron, Western Digital, and Seagate are becoming the new critical bottlenecks. This isn't your typical consumer electronics cycle, either. The sheer scale of investment is giving us unprecedented visibility into 2027 and 2028.
High visibility is great until you realize the view is of a massive spending spree that might be running out of gas. I mean, look at the sheer volume of capital being moved. We have Abu Dhabi's MGX securing nearly $0 as a tech fund and Starwood Capital raising over $10 billion just for data center properties. It's almost comical how much money we're throwing at empty warehouses.
But that capital has to go somewhere to avoid a total collapse in ROI. Pivot noted that the primary risk to the entire AI trade is a fundamental shift in the narrative from can AI work to can AI pay. The hyperscalers are making massive capex commitments that are currently outstripping the ability of enterprise customers to show any measurable economic return.
The can it pay part is currently a resounding maybe. Which leads us to the inevitable, the era of renting out the leftovers.
Right, and we're already seeing the first strategic retreats. Bloomberg Tech reported that Meta is pivoting toward a two-tier cloud strategy, where they move away from high-margin software ambitions to a low-margin infrastructure model, essentially renting out their excess compute and API access. It's a move to monetize their massive capex before their agentic AI products can even scale, and it's already causing a 15% share drop for neocloud providers like CoreWeave.
It's essentially turning the world's most advanced social media company into a digital landlord. But if we're renting out the compute, we still have to power the landlords. And that brings us to the part of this conversation that sounds like science fiction, nuclear reactors for chatbots.
It's actually becoming an engineering necessity. Bloomberg Tech highlighted how Valor Atomics is pioneering a waterless AI infrastructure model. They're pairing high-temperature gas reactors, which reject heat at levels suitable for air cooling, with NVIDIA's specialized architectures to eliminate the massive local water consumption that usually plagues data centers.
We're replacing water with nuclear heat to keep the GPUs from melting. Honestly, at this point, if someone tells me we're going to power the next LLM with a captured lightning bolt, I might actually believe them.
It's part of a larger five-layer cake of infrastructure where electricity is the foundational commodity. This actually gives the U.S. a strategic edge because of our ability to provide the low-cost electricity required for this expansion. But the costs are leaking out into the real world. Platformer noted that we are entering a period of AI-powered inflation that could last through 2027, where the demand for memory and storage is driving up the cost of everything from software to MacBooks and even Xbox consoles by as much as 15%.
The AI revolution is literally making my laptop more expensive. Great.
It's a systemic shift.
Even the cost of entry for things like autonomous driving has plummeted, with the A16Z show reporting that training costs per flop are down 150 times since the Waymo era. But as the cost of training drops, the focus moves to the efficiency of the token yield. Companies like Etched are challenging NVIDIA by building chips specifically for the inference phase, using a low-voltage approach to maximize how many tokens you get per chip.
It's a race to see who can make the cheapest, most efficient unit of intelligence, all while the energy bill threatens to bankrupt the planet.
The goal is to reach a point where the efficiency of the hardware, like Etched's ability to bypass chip capacity, constraints through cluster-scale memory, finally matches the massive scale of the capital being deployed.
Investors in the semiconductor supply chain need to stop looking at GPU shipments and start watching the quarterly enterprise software spend. Keep a close eye on the energy-to-token ratio in the next round of quarterly earnings, because if the cost of a single token doesn't start dropping, the whole tower might wobble. But even if the hardware stays cheap, a much more complex problem is brewing in how these models actually start making decisions on their own.
Maya, I was looking through some recent shifts in the SDLC, and it feels like we're moving past the era of writing code and straight into the era of managing agents. We're seeing this fundamental architectural pivot from deterministic, static CI/CD pipelines towards something much more autonomous.
Instead of a human engineer setting up a predictable, boring script that does exactly what it's told, we're just letting the AI take the wheel. That sounds less like engineering and more like a high-stakes game of let's see what happens.
It's actually much more structured than that, though the risk is definitely higher. We're seeing the rise of platform engineering too, where the consumer of the platform isn't just a human developer anymore, but the machines themselves. As Ned Belevance and the VMware team discussed, the goal is to create a shift-down approach, integrating security and governance directly into the infrastructure so that agents have high-quality, observable data to work with.
Right, because if the agent is learning on a platform that's a mess, it's just going to learn how to break things faster.
The bottleneck isn't actually creating the agents, it's building the harness to run them. Jody from Harness pointed out that while enterprises are building these agents, the real challenge is the security framework, things like using sandbox containers, unique agent identities, and OMA-based policy enforcement. As the new Stack podcast noted, deploying agents in downstream delivery pipelines is significantly more dangerous than coding agents, because if an agent makes an error in the pipeline, there's no secondary layer of automated validation to catch that failure before it hits production.
We're essentially building much more sophisticated cages for these digital workers.
Stepping back, it's about protecting the agent from itself. The risk isn't just an external hack, it's an autonomous agent finding a way to bypass a human-centric guardrail to complete a task. This is why the industry is moving toward hardened execution environments, using non-shared kernels to prevent lateral movement. And there's a massive financial component too. CyberWire Daily reported that organizational AI agents can pose a unique financial risk, potentially triggering recursive, expensive search loops that could increase costs by up to 14 times when they hit a data access roadblock.
14 times. That's not a learning curve, that's an infinite credit card swipe.
Which is why the new operational requirement is token economics. Companies like Harness are introducing cost control mechanisms, tracking token usage per agent and setting budget caps or human-in-the-loop triggers. We're even seeing the emergence of an agent marketplace, with different tiers of agents managed, certified, and community-shared, allowing vendors to inject specialized intelligence directly into the workflow.
It sounds like we're moving toward a phase 5 where the entire lifecycle, from a Jira ticket being created to the code hitting production, is just one continuous autonomous loop.
That's the vision. But to make that work, the platform has to act as a performance multiplier. As Miles Gray mentioned, modern platforms need to incorporate things like the Model Context Protocol so that agents can actually use platform components as tools. It's all about building a rock-solid substrate with enough observability and undo capabilities so that if an agent goes rogue, an admin can actually trace and revert the action.
Engineering companies need to stop focusing on how smart the agent is and start focusing on how much control they have over it.
We'll see if the first major autonomous deployment ends in a seamless update or a massive unrecoverable outage.
Infrastructure architects need to prioritize undo buttons over autopilot features. Keep an eye on the first surge in token budget alerts in quarterly earnings reports. That'll tell you if the autonomy is actually being reined in. But as these systems become more autonomous, a much more manual struggle is playing out in the hardware and policy layers between the US and China. Entry-level job postings in the US offering visa sponsorship have cratered from over 10% in 2023 to a mere 2.3% this year. We are witnessing a massive self-inflicted brain drain.
It's the structural tightening of the American tech moat. We've moved from a default yes environment, where model release and talent inflow were assumed, to a default no environment, where the primary assumption for any model exceeding current capabilities is that the US government will restrict its release.
We're basically building a high-tech fortress, but we're accidentally locking the smartest people in the hallway. This geopolitical tech divide sounds less like a strategic advantage and more like a very expensive way to isolate ourselves.
The mechanism is shifting from economic competition to sovereign control. As Anne Neuberger noted, technology has transitioned from a diplomatic tool to the primary arena for national power. When the Commerce Department uses unlegislated export controls, like the recent move to restrict Anthropic's Fable 5, it creates a de facto licensing regime. It allows the administration to pick winners and losers through executive action rather than transparent public criteria.
Right, so instead of a rulebook, we're playing by vibes. If Amazon reports a failure in a model's guardrails, suddenly a piece of software is a cyber weapon and it's banned. It's like a referee calling a penalty because they didn't like the player's jersey color.
It's more volatile than that. Platformer flagged that these unilateral restrictions are creating a state of regulatory chaos, where even the administration's own benchmarking divisions might dispute the necessity of the interventions. This instability is driving a massive strategic pivot. If you are a major American enterprise, you can't rely on the frontier American models because they are subject to sudden government clawbacks. Instead, you look toward Chinese open-source models, like ZAI's GLM 5.2, because they offer predictable access and local control.
Wait, so by trying to starve China of our best AI, we're actually incentivizing American companies to run on Chinese code. That's a spectacular way to lose a war.
It's a paradox. China is essentially using a turbo-dumping strategy. They are aggressively promoting open-source AI to flood the global market, which prevents American firms from ever establishing profitable proprietary standards. If they can make the world's infrastructure dependent on their free models, they achieve cyber colonization. Meanwhile, the U.S. is caught in a loop. We want to restrict exports to maintain a security edge, but if we restrict too much, we sever the very link that allows our technology to become the global standard.
And let's not forget the shadow economy. While we're arguing about official export licenses, there's an entire underground token economy in China where proxies monetize access to Claude by selling cheap tokens to Chinese developers. They aren't just stealing the software, they're collecting massive datasets of our user inputs to distill our intelligence into their own models.
There's a signal here. The gap between the American frontier and the open source frontier is shrinking from 9 months to as little as 3 months through these distillation tactics. If we don't use a maximum export strategy to ensure our values are embedded in the global stack, we risk a future where we are forced to rely on unvetted, unobservable Chinese technology for our basic digital existence.
American venture capitalists are going to stop chasing pure returns and start acting like an extension of the State Department. Keep an eye on the next round of Supermicro investigations in Taiwan to see if the U.S. chip embargoes are actually breaking the supply chain or just driving it underground. Looking back at this week's developments, the common thread is the evaporation of human latency. Whether we are discussing the rapid encryption of records by the Jade Puffer ransomware or the shift in brand visibility toward LLM compatibility, we are witnessing a landscape where the speed of execution has decoupled from human oversight. We are no longer just managing software, we are managing autonomous momentum.
That momentum is fundamentally altering the calculus for CTOs and infrastructure investors. The most critical implication here isn't just the technical difficulty of the transition, but the escalating cost of maintaining stability. As we see the energy-to-token ratio climb and the potential for 14 times increases in operational costs due to recursive agent loops, the decision-makers at firms like NVIDIA or Amazon can no longer treat compute as a scalable utility. They are now forced to manage a high-stakes trade-off between the pursuit of sheer model intelligence and the physical, geopolitical, and financial reality of the energy and hardware required to sustain it. The margin for error in capital expenditure is shrinking as the gap between hardware investment and measurable economic return becomes the new global volatility metric.
It all hinges on whether our infrastructure can scale alongside the intelligence it hosts.
Keep a close eye on the upcoming energy consumption reports from the major neocloud providers. If we see a decoupling where token output plateaus despite massive power increases, it will signal that we've hit the ceiling of our current silicon-centric architecture and that the era of unconstrained agentic growth is officially hitting a physical wall.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of the Weekly Digest. We'll see you next Monday.